You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound. A dimension of sight. A dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
What is happening?
It's all I don't know.
You're listening to the AME Radio Show.
Wake up, everybody. It's Friday morning. You're listening to the AME Radio Show, the show that is the voice of artists and entertainers everywhere. I am your host, Jason Dowd. We have got a great show for you guys today. We have a couple of great guests coming on, and I hope that they'll be able to talk to you about what they have going on and inspire you to go check it out. Or follow your own dreams. That's what this whole show is about. We want to inspire you to follow your dreams, tap into that creativity, and make something amazing in your life. And everybody that has been on this show has walked the walk and talked the talk. And I hope that their story will inspire you to do that as well. So, what do we have for you today? Well, we have a couple of great guests coming on. We have Adam DeCabalis, and he is the author of a book called Caravan. He's going to be talking to us about that. And then we have Kevin L. Jackson coming on. Now, if you are a business owner or you are a social media junkie, you probably know that Google Plus exists. And a lot of the big businesses use Google Plus more so than the individual person. Because of that, there was a little glitch, and unfortunately, Google Plus will be no longer around in the next couple of months, and we're going to talk to you about what to prepare if you have a Google Plus account, or if you don't. How is it going to impact you? How's it going to impact your business and stuff like that? So that if you use that, this is something you're going to want to absolutely listen to. But before we get into any of that, go check out our website, www.theamemagazine.com. It has all of our outlets on there, the television, radio, magazine. You can get links to our social media networks, which we encourage you to follow us on. And, of course, we have an app, too. It's free. It's for the Apple and Android platforms. All you have to do is download it. All the links are right there on our website. Okay, so I had something I planned out that I wanted to write about, and I wanted to talk to you guys about. I don't know if I want to do it or not. So right now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a look at, since we are past Halloween, we're into Thanksgiving, even though you probably wouldn't recognize it walking in the stores, because you know what? Christmas is taking over. This bothers me, honestly, a little bit, because you know what? I love Christmas, and I love Thanksgiving. But it's basically the 11th of November, the 10th, something like that, of November here. I don't even know what day it is. And we're already celebrating Christmas. Now, Christmas is over 30 days away. So by the time Christmas comes up, guess what? We don't care about it anymore. That's where it's losing its magic. However, I am not going to do that. What we are going to do is we're going to focus on Thanksgiving. Now, this is the month of giving thanks. When the pilgrims came here and they barely survived their first winter here because of how harsh it was, and they didn't have food, they didn't know how to grow things, they took the help and advice of the Native Americans who helped them survive their first year. And because of that, they all got together and celebrated because they made it. A lot of them died. But regardless, they came together as a group and they made it possible. They made whatever it needed to survive possible. Now, this year, for me, has been extremely hard. Since last October to this October, I have had probably some of the most destructive things I've ever had happen in my life. For one, I'm going to go over them really quick because a lot of you don't always know what happened, but I know I've been talking about balance and stuff, so this is why. In October, in September of last year, 2017, we had the Hurricane Irene, and it put us out for a long time. We had some problems here, and the lack of electricity really impacted my health. By the time I got out of that, not even a month later, my wife had a stroke, and we've been dealing with trying to get her rehabilitated throughout this time. Now, luckily, she's okay. She does have some issues, but she's working through them. In that same time, my dog got really, really sick, and one was getting too old, and he got really sick too. But in February of this year, I gave my dogs bad treats, and it killed one of my dogs and almost killed another one of my dogs. After that, during that time, also, my entire kitchen blew up. I lost my stove, my refrigerator. Let's see here. What else blew up? My TVs blew up. I had two TVs blow up. I had a computer blow up. I had a laptop blow up, my Apple blow up. I had to replace all of that stuff. My water softener blew up. I started a business, and unfortunately, my wife got she does daycare, so we got hit where she had the least amount of hours she's ever had with staggering bills. And we barely survived this. I know that's a really downer story, but I have to tell you because of the fact that I want to inspire you. Regardless of what happened to me this year, my health took a really bad turn. My MS really flared up, and it's been really tough for me to function. My family also had other serious problems throughout, and we all had to come together to survive. So, with all of this loss and destruction, there really isn't much to be thankful for, is there? That's wrong. You know why? Because through this, I may have lost, you know, just about everything around me, but my wife is still here. My family is still okay. I got two new dogs that I love to death. My other dog is still okay, and because of her, I took that situation and turned it into a positive business. So I can guarantee you that through my treats, no dogs will ever eat my treats and be contaminated with anything. So I started a business, and it's fun. It's growing. I've learned a lot along the way. You know, I've had to become a handyman, really. You know, when I see how expensive this stuff is to have somebody install it and fix it for me, I had no choice but to do it myself because I just didn't have the money. So not only did I learn skills that I did not know I have, I'm very thankful that I challenged myself enough to pursue it. I overcame the intimidation of doing this stuff, and I did it because not only did I have to save money, but I had to fix what needed to be fixed. And I realized inside of myself that when the times got tough, I got creative. When I got scared or my wife got scared, I stood up and overcame that. I tried to be a role model for people during a very tough time. I try not to show people that I got hurt, and I realized how strong I am because of that. I realized that if I had been given everything that I wanted to be given and handed to me along the way, this year would have been the destruction of me. I would not have been able to survive. So I am thankful for all the people that let me suffer a little bit and let me learn from my mistakes along the way, who didn't give me the answers yet made me seek out those answers because that's what I had to do this year. I think the experiences that I've had, good or bad, because it made me a better person, it made me a stronger person. It made me appreciate life more because I didn't realize that I had a friend die on me until I walked by his grave accidentally. You know, I'm thankful for the opportunity to have met these people and have people in my life that I care about. And most importantly, I am very thankful for the opportunity to realize that life is short and that we cannot sit there and be behind a desk all the time. And we can't just be inside of our home playing video games and relaxing and just going out and doing nothing because we need a balance. That's what I'm thankful for. I'm thankful that I made it through this year unscathed. I mean, yeah, I lost a lot, but I didn't lose the things that were important. And I'm thankful for opening up my eyes to what I was missing. And I think that if we do this often, I'm going to try to do this throughout this month. I'm going to be thankful for different things. And I want to know what you're thankful for as well. Because if we're thankful for things, we don't take things for granted. And when we take things for granted, we lose it. And sometimes it's stuff that we cannot get back. So I want you to look around your whatever it is in your life right now and be thankful for it. Be thankful for the opportunities, good or bad. The good ones kept you in check. The bad ones kept you in check. The good ones made you realize how amazing life is. So we need a balance in our life. I want to know what you're thankful for. Tell me what you're thankful for. Send it to me, and I'll tell you what. I'll put it on here. Next week, I'm going to be talking to you about some things that I'm thankful for about this show. And I'm going to continue to tell my story along the way because I want to inspire you. And I want to make you realize that what you have in life is important. So open up your eyes and be thankful for the things that you have. Even if it took blood, sweat, and tears and devastation along the way to get it. And sometimes be thankful for the things that were just handed to you because that's just as important as well. Okay, guys, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When I come back, we have Adam on the line. He's ready to talk to you about his books and more. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this.
I'm Gladdy, the dachshund, the face of Gladdy's Goodies. Are you worried about your pet's health? My parents were too, especially since I developed pancreatitis. They couldn't find any treats I could eat, so they made some. Our natural treats are healthy for all dogs, with and without health issues. We have lots of delicious flavors like chicken, turkey, salmon, sweet potato, beef, and more. With our homemade treats, you won't worry about the contents because they have no chemicals, fillers, or bad ingredients. Go to GladdysGoodies.com now to get your fur friend a bag and pick them up some swag while you're there. You'll be glad you did. Remember, we have the treats and swag to make their tails wag. Again, that's GladdysGoodies.com. Again, that's GladdysGoodies.com.
Hey guys, it's Michael Campion, and I play Jackson Fuller on Fuller House. I just want to say, Fuller House Season 4, it's coming to Netflix real soon, so be sure to tune in sometime towards the end of the year. Thank you, guys.
Hi, this is Jennifer McGill from the New Mickey Mouse Club, also a new recording artist, and you're listening to AME Radio.
Oh, what a mess you got, the best I'm hard and broke, and now it's just a joke, cause you're moving right on. I'm still here and you're gone. Oh, what a scene, you know I didn't reach for the winds to change. Won't ever be the same, cause the kisses that you blew could never improve. I think I need some time for myself without anybody else. I just need to...
Welcome back to the show, everybody. We have a line with us. Our special guest, his name is Adam DeCubilis. And he is the owner and CEO of Third Lion Publishing, which is a publishing company which has released his brand new book, Caravan. He's also going to be talking to us about a lot of different things like literature, historical fiction, and so much more. And we're really excited to talk to him about his ventures, his publishing company, how he got into writing, and so much more. So welcome, Adam, to the show. How are you doing today?
Doing great, Jason. How about yourself?
I'm doing fantastic. You know, I love talking to authors because you can get so creative with your minds, and then when you're able to take that creativity and those stories that you got to tell and put them on paper, you know, they become timeless works of art, and people can enjoy them for sometimes centuries, depending on how long the books last and stuff like that. And we really do, those authors really do tell, you know, make the world go around, because everything from music to movies to television to just books, they're all written, they're all from a story somehow, some way, and you guys are the ones that try to make that happen. So I guess let's kind of talk about first how you got into writing. When did you decide this is something I want to pursue?
Well, first, Jason, I got to say thanks a lot. That's a big compliment, being a writer myself. Thanks so much. Well, how I got into writing, I've always been very connected to stories. Even as a very young boy, I think I started writing my first stories when I was around 4. And ever since then, I've just always had a love for telling stories and describing these things, and movies had a big part to play in that. And little by little, I had a passion for writing short stories, and little by little, I decided, you know, if I can turn this into something, hey, this would be amazing, because I would love to turn this into a career. I love what you can tell with a story and the message you can convey to somebody. And that's how I got started, and it just comes from that passion of story and how you can affect people.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And you know what I like the most about writing stories is visualizing the entire story in your head as you're writing it.
Mm.
You know, I think that's one of the funnest things about it, because you can, what you see is then what you can put it on paper. And a lot of people don't have that ability to do that. Even though they write some amazing things, they can't see it sometimes play out like a movie in their imagination. But they just know how to write it, and they know what they want to say, and then it's up to everybody else to create their own little movie in their heads. Do you have that? Are you able to see it and write it at the same time?
Absolutely. I think even more so, I'm a very visual guy. That's how my mind works. I'm very visual of things. So one way that I really channel that is through music. I've been really thinking about this a lot lately. You know, when I listen to a song, whether it's on the radio or on my iPhone or just something playing in the background, I'm always seeing a movie taking place, whether it's a music video, whether it's a scene from a movie or a car chase or whatever it could be. I'm definitely a very visual guy. So while I'm writing, I definitely have music that helps inspire those images in my head that help me write.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the other thing that I love about writing is being able to describe everything. And because you got to just kind of set a tone for that book, and you got to really be a little bit more descriptive as opposed to a movie, because you see everything in the movie, so you know what it looks like. But in the physical book, you got to describe everything. And sometimes I notice that I've read some books and I'm like, man, you know what? This guy just went over and above what he needed to do to make it work. Sometimes I just wonder if he just wanted to hear himself talk or if he wanted to seem like he was a little bit more intelligent than other writers. I don't know what it is, but I like to keep it simple, but yet also be, you know, profound in the writing that comes out when I read books and when I write my own stuff sometimes. What is it for you? Do you like to over embellish it a little bit? Do you like to try to keep it just simple to the point so it gets on with the story and doesn't drag it down? What's your take?
My take on it is I love detail. I think, and that's a little bit of a blessing and a curse. I love the backstory and the history, the everything. So the more that I can do to convey a certain message to a reader and get the same image that's in my head into their head, that's very important to me. But where that comes into it being a curse is that you can definitely go overboard on it. And in my early samples of writing, you'll see that I go into these wild descriptions that just don't work. But what happens is you have to keep it very slim, and you have to let the reader imagine. You made a very good point. It's not a movie where you're showing them everything. Because on the screen, you can see it. It's there. The director has the image right in front of you. But whereas when you're reading a book, the words have to inspire that image in you. And I think that's something that people who like to over-embellish, as yours truly like to do, is to focus on inspiring the images rather than describing them.
But sometimes it's necessary, you know, especially if it's something that, you know, you're creating up and nobody would actually know what it looks like or what it is, or, you know, because it's something made up in your own mind, then you'd have to be a little bit more descriptive about it. But, you know, sometimes it's like they're talking about the night and they're just going on and on and on and on. It was like five paragraphs of how the night looks, and it's like, I kind of get an idea how much the night looks like. I go outside all the time, you know? And, you know, so sometimes it's just, I think it depends on where you start and what you're talking about that could justify something a little bit more embellished than others.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you anymore. I think definitely if you plan it correctly, you can use getting into incredibly good detail to have more than enough effect, because I believe that that's where the contrast comes in. If you're just describing everything at full volume, when you really mean to describe something at full volume, it's not going to have the effect. It's like crying wolf with your words. But if you leave certain things to the imagination, and then when it comes to the punchline, to the image that you really need them to see, or even if you're describing something technical, you can go there for sure.
Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about your writing. What type of style do you like, and what type of genre is your favorite type of genre to write?
I really like stories that have an aspect of rags to riches, that they have this overcoming adversity, but that's just as like a theme. But I love historical fiction. I love thrillers. I love stories that have a really rich backstory to them, but are also, you know, they leave the imagination up to you. One of my favorite examples of this is The Godfather, right? I've read the book, and they do, even though it's a pretty good-sized book, it has this great effect of portraying this really deep world, but all the while leaving plenty of things up to the imagination.
Mm-hmm. you know, you talk about historical fiction and stuff like that. Sometimes, have you ever thought about writing like a book and you can see a character, like let's just say, let's go back into, you know, ancient Rome. Let's talk about Spartacus. What if you had a character that was like a friend of Spartacus and just kind of walks around and goes on adventures with him? You know, I don't see too much of that anymore like I used to when I was growing up, and I think it was probably because I was a kid, so they were trying to help me learn about those eras and stuff like that. But I think that kind of stuff's fun. Have you ever thought about doing something like that?
Yeah, I've always thought that that'd be an interesting point of view to write from, and portraying a really interesting character is sort of like the Watson perspective in the Sherlock Holmes Watson story. Mm-hmm. And that's a really interesting point, because you get to allow the real protagonist of the story, which would be Sherlock Holmes, to be seen in this almost larger than it's that point of view is perfect for setting up a larger than life persona. And I definitely agree with you. That'd be very exciting to write. Now I've played with the idea before.
And you know what, I think that makes it even more fun when you're writing something like that is the research you have to do, because you kind of have to look at these historical points wherever somebody came up with these characters, or if they're a real human being, and you got to try to know those situations and look at it from a different point of view. Because we know, let's just say you're doing a story about Abraham Lincoln, and you go to where he's doing the Gettysburg Address and the Emancipation Proclamation. We all know what he says. You know, we see it from his point of view, but we've never seen it from the point of view of the people standing there listening to it, or the people that helped him write it and got him to that situation and how they felt inside as they watch him read this stuff. You know, I think that's kind of fun.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. History is one of the greatest inspirations for me, besides traveling. Whenever I travel, I get inspiration, but history, just whenever if I watch a documentary or I read a historical book, it just gets me thinking, wow, what would it have been like to be in this situation at that time, or as that person, or you know, what would it have been like to know this or this person at that time? And history is such a fascinating subject, and it's a well of creativity you can just keep on drawing from.
That's true. So let's talk a little bit about your book here, Caravan. What is Caravan all about?
Caravan is about a man from England who gets hired by a magazine to take pictures and capture the culture of Morocco and of the desert. Because it's set just a little bit after World War I is starting to wind down, and a lot of soldiers are returning back to England. And when that happens, there's this big cultural, there's a heat wave of activity as far as interest in the Middle East and their culture, and the magazine sends him over there to take pictures and bring back information, and along the way, he takes this caravan across the desert, and along the way, he meets all these interesting people, and he begins to realize the caravan is actually being followed by this mysterious group of warriors. And that's what it's about. It's about his struggle in the desert, and about learning more about the desert and about himself all the while. And it's about the differences in cultures.
That's really cool that you picked Morocco, especially after World War I, because I know in World War II, it had a really significant place for those escaping the war. And also, you know, soldiers seeking asylum in other places so that way they wouldn't be killed. And that's kind of where the movie The Casablanca came off of with Humphrey Bogart. You know, he was part, you saw the Germany and everything else and the conflicts down in that area. So it's kind of like a place where you could go to that they really couldn't kill you, but yet they, you're kind of like a prisoner at your own right. And I love that area, and I was trying to do a little bit of research on it myself, because I know since those wars, that really did play a big key. It was a port and everything else that, you know, had a lot of significance during that time frame between the 1913 and 1945. So was that one of the reasons why you went for something like that for Morocco?
Not particularly because of the film Casablanca, but definitely because that area of the world has a really rich and interesting history.
Mm-hmm.
I've just always been drawn to that culture and to that part of the world. So for sure, yeah.
Well, I was just using Casablanca as an example of where they kind of showed what some of those prisoners and stuff were and those exiles people were escaping down there to save face, basically, but they still needed permission by, you know, the different countries to get out. So, you know, it's a very interesting part of the area, and, you know, Morocco does have a lot of significance. Tell us a little bit about your character. How did you develop your character, and what were some of the important things you wanted to make sure he portrayed?
Well, so the main character's name is William, and William is based a lot on the character of Lawrence of Arabia that Peter O'Toole plays in the 1962 film Lawrence of Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
And up until that point, so as I was writing the story, I had this sort of Clark Gable kind of really Americanized macho man in my head, and instantly I knew, you know, you could just poke holes in it like a paper bag. And I realized, okay, the character needs a lot more depth. It needs personality. It needs weaknesses and strengths and all these important things. It can't just be a poster.
Mm-hmm.
So after seeing the film, as I was watching the film, I stopped and I said to myself, "Hey, that's my guy. That's William. That's the character I'm trying to portray." And immediately I took on that character and I started to make things work towards that. And what I'm trying to portray through William is the sense that everybody has a history, because as the story goes on, you begin to realize these little things, like he avoids certain things, he's attracted to certain things, he has these very particularized views, and they're all shaped by his history that that gets uncovered throughout the story.
Mm-hmm.
And that, in a sense, is a metaphor for everyone, because everyone has a story. Everybody has a history. Good things have happened to them. Bad things have happened to them. Amazing things. It could be in a movie of its own. Because has happened to everybody. And that's what I hope to portray through William, is that, in a sense, everybody has their own backstory, their own amazing history.
You know, when I was growing up in school, my teacher said that every story has a underlying meaning or underlying something about it, you know, like the anti-transcendentalist in Moby Dick and everything else, and the whale symbolized God, and you know, Ahab was the man trying to take down God and be as strong as God, and you know, you could take that however you want to read it. You know, everybody reads things differently, everybody interprets things differently. I tend to disagree with that, but that doesn't necessarily, not about the Moby Dick, but just with every book has something like that. Does yours have something where you're trying to teach something, or you're trying to push a moral, or are you just sitting there having a fun story that, you know, that shows somebody's life going through something?
Yeah, definitely. There is a moral to the story, but while I was writing the book, I took a lot of care in making sure that I wasn't forcing the story on anybody, because I didn't want the book to be a sermon. I wanted it to be a really fun, interesting story that you could enjoy, and it would be entertaining, and you would get a great floating feeling off of it. But if your mind is open enough to interpret it, it's there, and you can grab it.
Mm-hmm.
And the moral of the story is freedom. Freedom essentially is the moral of the story, that within the basic rules of reality, you can do and be whatever you want. You can go anywhere and you can create whatever life you want.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not really shoved on everybody. It's just kind of in the background, and you can, as you said, take it for interpretation.
Mm-hmm. What's your take on something like that, though? Do you believe that every story has to have some type of morals, backgrounds, or anything like that, or symbolism inside of it, or can it just be a regular story that you just want to have fun about and just talk?
That's a great question. I believe that any story, well, not any story, but I believe that both are fine. It all depends on the artist's intent, on the creator's intent. If they're driven to create a story that has a very deep and deep moral that people will get a lot of meaning out of, like The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho, then go ahead. I'll encourage you to do it. That's fantastic. But then again, if you want to shoot a movie like James Bond, where it's like an action movie and there's not really a lot of morals going on, there's just explosions and car chases, go ahead. I love both. All I care about is is the story good? Does the story carry? Does it communicate the message that you're trying to communicate?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I know at the beginning of the interview here, we did talk about Third Line Publishing, which is your publishing company. Just to, you know, in case anybody's out there wondering, I'm sure that they're going to ask, are you publishing other people's work right now, or is it just your work that you're publishing?
At the moment, it's just my work, but later in the future, we're most definitely going to open up our doors to other authors.
And how did you decide to create your own publishing company? What made you drive to that as opposed to maybe going and looking for somebody to publish your books that way?
Well, as I was getting the book wound down and I was looking what options I had to go through and get the book out, I did a lot of research on the traditional publishing methods and the independent publishing way of doing things. And I sort of weighed, okay, you know, if you go traditional, you know, you send your book out and you have to get an agent, and then from there you have to get a publisher. And once you do all this big hassle that takes about a year, you'll only get about, you'll still have to do all your own marketing. And it's basically the same as doing everything independent, except you're a lot more constrained and there's not as much freedom and you don't get to keep as much that you make. So by going independent, there's a lot of freedom and there's a lot more options you could do so. For instance, you can you know, take other authors on, you can change genres, you have control over your cover and pricing and everything. So there's just so much more freedom. That's what I'm attracted to.
But it also has some downfalls, too. I mean, obviously, those other guys are established. You know, they got connections. You got to establish those connections. But that just makes it even more amazing when you get those and you make it work. You know, a lot of people just don't have the backbone to do that. And that's okay. That's why, you know, people are out there to help them out in other ways. But I admire people that get out there and be independent, especially even including, you know, musicians and stuff like that. It's not easy. But I'll tell you what, the benefits really do outweigh the negativities about it. And if you put in extra work to make sure it's what you want and you can get that, and it can be probably better than being signed by a label itself.
Yeah, I totally agree. And again, it all comes down to what your intent is as the creator of the book. If your goal is to, you know, have a certain publisher's name on the spine of your book, go ahead. But if your goal is to have freedom with what you're doing and get the book out, that's also a great option. And I'm all for the climb and getting past the adversity. And honestly, I wouldn't have it any other way. I love the way things are going independent. I love the struggle, and that's what I'm about. I love it.
Absolutely. Well, Adam, we're just about out of time, so please tell everybody where they can find your book, learn more about your publishing company, maybe follow you on social media too if you have something like that.
Yeah, sure thing. So for social media, my handles are all under the name Adam DeColibus. So that's Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. For my website, go to thirdlionstories.com, and that's a fiction blog that me and a couple authors have up. Where we post a bunch of free stories of a lot of different genres. And Third Line Publishing will also have a about page on there that you can take a look at if you're interested.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on here, Adam, talking about your stories, your visions, your passions for writing. I hope that you will inspire other people to pick up a pen, write themselves, and get their story out on paper. And we look forward to anything else that you have coming out, and wish you all the best on this particular book caravan.
I appreciate it, Jason. Have a great day. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you for coming on. And guys, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back after this. Don't go anywhere.
Do you love horror? The strange and unusual. Fantasy creatures are urban legends. Do you want to step inside a dream or nightmare? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then you should check out internationally exhibiting artist Jason Dowd and his award-winning photographic collections by visiting www.imaginationartstudios.com. Get inside his mind and experience his inner weird.
Hi, this is Crystal Hunt. I play Alicia Trisk on the new PureFlix original series, Hilton Head Island. Log on to PureFlix.com so you can stream Hilton Head Island and see me along with my mother, played by Don Mills, and my brother, played by Antonio Sabato Jr. Hope you tune in.
Hey, everybody. This is John Schneider. You know, Dukes of Hazzard, Smallville, haves and have-nots. Anyway, you are listening to a great show, the AME Radio Show. I love it. I love it.
Welcome back to the show, everybody, and I don't know if you guys heard, but there is a major shakeup coming around with social media today, and that means Google Plus is no longer going to be around, and we got all the details on that, what it's going to have an impact on you, if it's going to have any at all. And we have our guest here, Kevin L. Jackson, on. He is a cloud computing expert. He's going to be talking to us about all of this and a lot more things that could, that how this could affect you, how this could affect your business, your websites, or anything else. So welcome to the show, Kevin. How are you doing today?
Hello, I'm doing well. Thank you very much for having me on.
Well, this is definitely something I was kind of anticipating for a while, and I'm glad we're here to have you kind of go over the ins and outs and what to expect and what can the fallout of Google Plus be. Now, I do know that Google Plus was never really one of the most popular social media sites, so I don't know how much it will affect people, but there are some people that used it quite a bit, and if you had a Gmail account, you had a Google Plus account, you probably didn't even know it. So kind of tell me a little bit about why the fallout happened on Google Plus.
Well, to be honest, to be truthful, Google Plus has really never caught on, and as far back as 2015, there was anticipation that Google Plus eventually would sort of fall away. Google Plus' main value, it seemed, was to connect the user to all of Google's products. It was good, but it really not a social experience, so to speak. I mean, it was kind of difficult to add people to it. You had to select what circle you want them to be in. And it never really transitioned to mobile either, because it used a lot of high-resolution photographs, which took high bandwidth, which is not really good on mobile phones. And, in fact, the sort of the brainchild behind Google Plus, Vic Gondotra, he left Google, and there was no succession plan behind him when he left. So it's sort of languished, and then the follow-on management started sort of rolling out and spinning out some of the most popular services like Photos and Hangouts. Mm-hmm. So Google Plus demise was, you know, transmitted long ago.
Sure. Yeah, I kind of felt it too myself, because it's like, you know, I went on there, I never really saw anything, I never really got any interactions, maybe once in a while I would. But the one thing that kind of concerned me the most is, like, when I would try to verify my site with Google, one of the things it made me do is kind of, like, sync it with Google+. And I don't know how that would impact my websites going forward when this thing eventually goes away. Is this going to have a major impact on those sites or, and other people that have done something like that?
Well, one of the biggest issues that happened most recently, I think, was sort of the last straw, was a bug that they found in the Google Plus API.
Mm-hmm.
This was the field that included a lot of personal information, name, email address, occupation, and so forth. It probably didn't include other data and data from other services, but it did allow the friends of users to actually have access to information. And analysis by Google themselves showed that about 500,000 Google Plus accounts were actually affected, and that over 400 APIs actually used this API, which meant that your information could have been shared with other applications without your knowledge. Mm. So this is a big issue.
That is a big issue. And I know that kind of Facebook's kind of going through the same thing right now, too, where they've had a lot of vulnerabilities inside of their APIs and a lot of other bugs, like with the newly released Facebook update, where on your phone it would give you a little button. You can click your profile easier so you could see it. But I guess that also made it very vulnerable to other people to attack it. Could Facebook see the same type of downfall because of this that Google Plus has?
Well, the thing that's happening now is what's known as data sovereignty. And it's come to the forefront because of European laws that help protect the personal information and data of European citizens. This is generally referred to as GDPR, or the General Data Protection Regulation. And it actually can issue quite large fines to companies that violate the data privacy of their users and their consumers. So Facebook got caught up in that with Cambridge Analytica and the use of data, which was really not approved by the users. So Google was sort of sitting back while kind of Facebook was in the limelight around this, being quiet, because they didn't want to get fines. So recently, I think Facebook has been fined, and Google could be fined as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the risk of continuing Google Plus far exceeded the value when you think about these fines.
Right.
And in fact, there was a very low usage rate of Google Plus anyway.
Right.
About 90% of Google Plus users lasted less than 5 seconds.
Wow. That's kind of hard to believe, you know, seeing how updated we are with social media and how obsessed we are with it. I mean, it did have a nice look to it. I do admit, I did like the look to it. I like the feel mm-hmm. of it, but I just never really knew how to use it that much. And I think that's really where other people were saying the same thing. It looked great, but it really had no functionality to it.
Right. And as like I said before, there was no real focus on mobility, no real focus on the social aspect of connecting, messaging, communicating with, you know, your friends and neighbors. And that's what social is all about.
Yeah. Now, what happens if you were a business or something like that, and you really did really put a big emphasis on using Google Plus? And I know a lot of people did, because they figured that it would rank higher in Google and stuff. So I get it. I get the mentality behind it. But what happens mm-hmm. now? Is this going to hurt? What are they going to need to do to try to wean themselves off of it and not destroy everything that they've worked so hard for?
Well, they're going to have to actually focus on transitioning to a new social channel. And I would strongly recommend looking at multiple social channels, because people use social in different ways. And you should never really put all your eggs in one basket.
Mm-hmm.
So Twitter is very interactive, much more interactive than, let's say, Facebook. And it has a different demographic. Instagram as well has a different demographic. So a business owner would need to look at who are their consumers, who are their customers, and which channel would be best for their targeted customers.
Makes a lot of sense. And you are right. There are a lot of different people that use different these different platforms. And I think the kids are getting more into the Instagram than maybe, you know, Twitter. Because I always hear them always say, you know, oh, that, you know, Facebook is for adults and it's for old people. And it's like, you know, you get that. And I guess, you know, that may be something very simple to say and people overlook it sometimes. But, you know, that's the kids telling you. That's, if you want to reach them, that's not where you go.
Exactly. And the thing you have to understand as a business owner is that change is constant. Mm-hmm. You may be Instagram today, it's going to be Snapchat tomorrow. So you need to be flexible with your channels and develop data repositories and data sources that you can use through multi-channel. Because it's all about multi-channel and multimedia if you're going to reach your audience.
Now, if you're going to come up with some type of social media platform, is it better to hire somebody that really knows what they're doing? I know you can do it yourself. And if you decide to go that route, what are some of the best ways that you can educate yourself on it? Because I know Snapchat. I know nothing about it. I don't understand it. To me, it kind of reminds me of the old Mission Impossible. You know, now that you've read this will self-destruct in 10 seconds, and I kind of lose to the idea of where you're going to go ahead and benefit from that. But I do see that the fun stuff with it, you know, where you make your mouth all big and stuff. I get that. But I don't know how a business could use that correctly. But are there what resources would you send somebody to learn these different platforms and see what is best for them and how to use it correctly?
Well, I would absolutely consult with a social media strategist because each of these channels have strengths and weaknesses, and their capabilities change constantly. You could spend all your time just researching these channels and not really get the use of it. Don't spend your time with, as I say, low-value activities. Spend a little money to get someone who's an expert, and then you can be more effective, and that will translate into more revenue.
Makes a lot of sense. It really does. I mean, I know I'm kind of one of the ones that want to jump in there and learn it myself because I'm really, you know, interested in how all these things work and how people's minds work and stuff like that. So for me, I think it would be fun to work with somebody that understands those trends and then learn it as I go. But I do know that it is very, very, very taxing to try to learn it on your own without any guidance. I do know that.
It is fun. It's fun and it's exciting, but it is time consuming. And as you build a community and an audience, it takes more and more of your time and effort. I myself have a very large audience on social media, but I work with a team in order to curate content, communicate with my audience, and stay relevant to their world, because that's the important aspect of it. So I would, like I say, I would strongly recommend know your audience, leverage your knowledge to pick right channels, and have a professional help you with curating your content and distributing it through multi-channels.
You know, you just said something very interesting back there, and I think that would play a huge part in choosing the right type of person to help you out with social media marketing. What are some of the qualities that you need to look at that they understand that will make them the right choice for you? Because, I mean, there's so many out there. I get stuff all the time by emails and unsolicited emails and solicited emails and all this other kind of stuff. So how do you know you're picking the right person that's gonna get what you need to have accomplished done?
Well, a very easy filter is look at their own social media following. If somebody's trying to sell social media to you and they only have 1,000 followers on Twitter, that doesn't speak volumes of their skill or capability or what they can do for you, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Similarly, if someone is only talking about a single channel, that shouldn't give you confidence that they understand the entire market. Mm-hmm. And third, ask them what type of metrics would they use or would they recommend so that you could know that they are being effective for you. If they can't answer those questions to your liking, move on.
Mm-hmm. You know, that metrics is a good keyword there, because I don't think too many people would know what that means unless they really knew the system and knew what they were doing. That's like one of those keywords you could throw out to some of these big professionals, and they're like, you know, they would know it, but anybody else that's just trying to learn it would not know. They'd be caught off guard. So that's a great keyword.
Yeah, absolutely. And the metrics are important.
Yes.
The thing that is really different with social media as opposed to traditional media is that you can see a response from an input. In traditional media, you just publish, and you are charged by the amount of content you put out into the marketplace, because it's very difficult to measure who actually read your newspaper article or picked up the paper or read your story or saw your ad. Mm-hmm. That's completely different in social media, because you can actually measure the impact of what you put out. You can see the interactions. You can see how many responses you get. And those are the metrics that help you understand your effectiveness. So if you're paying money and not getting any response, it will show up in the metrics.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know one of the key things is with social media, you know, you get on and you have a drunken night, and you punch a bunch of stupid stuff up there. That can destroy your credibility in a heartbeat. Is there any way to fix it once you put it out there?
As I say, once it's on the internet, it's there forever.
That's right.
So the short answer to that is no. So that's why it's important to understand your audience and curate your content, and really, you know, don't be a chump. Work with a professional.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And, you know, one of the two key things I make sure I stay away from, because it's a lose-lose situation, is religion and politics. You're going to lose no matter what happens with those. You know, you're always going to manage to piss somebody else off and lose people this way. So if you're in business, I would just say stay away from those, right?
Absolutely, unless that is your business.
True.
Then it's still very, very difficult. Mm-hmm. Focus on your core value to your audience. Understand your product. Understand your service. Understand the value that you're delivering to your consumers. And make sure your message focuses on those. And don't go off message. When you go off message, all you're doing is allowing your competitors a way in.
Right. Man, Kevin, you are a vast knowledge of stuff like this. I've really enjoyed talking to you here, and I know we're kind of running out of time, and I want to be able to get people to understand what you do for a living.
Sure.
And how you can help them and stuff. So tell us a little bit about you, and then tell us where people can follow you or find you if they need any advice themselves, or just to have you do some work for them.
No, great. I'm the CEO of GovCloud Network, and a managing partner in Social. A Social is a social media management firm that helps businesses interact and leverage the social framework. In GovCloud, I do consulting, training, and education on cloud computing, because cloud computing is really foundational to social media, artificial intelligence, machine learning, and many of the leading technologies that we are leveraging in business today. So you could reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at Kevin_Jackson, or on LinkedIn, or you can just Google me, Kevin Jackson Cloud Computing, and I'll come up.
Wow, Kevin, this has been so much fun. I've learned a lot, and, you know, I can definitely tell you know what you're talking about, and that's why we like to get guests like you on here, for people that don't And, you know, you can give them, steer them in the right direction. So thank you so much for coming on. This has been so much fun.
My pleasure.
All right, guys. We're going to take a quick commercial break. I hope you learned a little bit. And when we come back, we have more, so don't go anywhere.
Jason Dowd of Imagination Art Studios is proud to announce the release of his steampunk collection, which is currently on tour across the country. There you will see beautiful handmade masks from Venice, Italy that accentuate beautiful women to create amazing stories and feelings to those who visit the collection. Each photo series has a theme, mask, authentic props, and beautifully elaborate outfits, all collaborated in the mind of Jason Dowd to create the right emotion and feeling. The masks come from a shop at Epcot at the Italian Pavilion, where all these photos are on display for you to see. This is one of the biggest accomplishments of his career, having his work at Disney. Come see the beautiful first release of the series, which includes Distressed Dancer, Spanish Serenade, The Pied Piper, and Reaching for the Czars. You can see them in person or online at www.imaginationartstudios.com. For more information, visit the website. Again, it's imaginationartstudios.com. Our Facebook is Imagination Art Studios. Twitter is at Dow Studios. And Instagram is at Jason Dow. Come and be mesmerized by the masks and the stories behind them.
Hi there, this is Kim Coles, and you can find my newest book, Open Your Gifts, at openyourgiftsbook.com. That's www.openyourgiftsbook.com. I hope you'll pick up a copy. Would love to have you read it. Bye!
Hey everyone, it's Lulu Ambrose from Stuck in the Middle, and you are listening to AME Radio Show.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. You know, I love that song, Zippity Doo Dah, Zippity A. My oh my, what a wonderful day. Plenty of sunshine heading my way. Zippity Doo Dah, Zippity A. I love that. You know why? Because it's true. You know, we can make things amazing. And I love that song. It inspires me. Every time I hear it, I just get excited. And I know I can get out there and try new things and challenge myself some more. And everything's going to be okay, no matter what it is. Everything will be okay. And A little background to that, it's pretty funny because a couple of days ago, you know, I have a WordPress site that I use for Gladys Goodies, and it runs off of WooCommerce, and I had a problem with one of the templates, and you know what? I tried to fix it before, and it didn't go well. So I'm like, how am I going to fix this so I can make this work? And then I found that there was a major glitch in there when I changed one of the templates over because I was trying it. And you know what? I thought it crashed the system. There's tons of errors all over the place. So I went in to restore a backup, only to find out that the company makes them restore it. You can't touch your restores. And by the time they got to it, it was too late. I was like, oh no, what am I going to do? So I decided I didn't want to rebuild the whole site. So I just tried something. And you know what? In trying it, I fixed it. I was so proud of myself. I actually fixed it, and I saved myself a lot of money because I went to the company and they said, yeah, we can integrate it for you. It's either $500 for a per hour package, minimum 5 hours. So it's like $99 an hour, or you can do $136 over the period of 6 months. So you have to do $136 a month for 6 months. I'm like, I just didn't have that money. So I was freaking out. And you know what? I believed in myself and I took a chance and I tried it and it worked. That's what I'm trying to tell you about that's what this whole show's about. Trying things, believing in yourself, and attempting it. And you know what? Worst thing that can happen is you got to rebuild it. You got to start over again, right? Or it doesn't work. The best thing that can happen is you get the result that you wanted. But you got to believe in yourself. You got to just try. You can't be afraid to try. And just do it. I promise you, good things will happen. Okay, guys, so in the next couple weeks, we have a couple of changes coming up here to the AME Radio Show, which I'm excited to kind of roll out, and I'll let you know when that happens, but one of them is going to be our theme song. Second part is we're going to be trying to introduce a little bit more music here, and I think that's going to be a lot of fun as well, because I know we started that and we kind of got away from it, but I want to bring it back because music is so important to our lives. Next thing is that we are on a couple of different radio stations, and you can hear us every single solitary Friday and Saturday. And to find us or hear us on the radio, you can go to our website, find all the locations there, or you can go to amfm247.com or their 11 a.m. FM stations every Friday at 6 a.m. and every Saturday at 5 p.m. You can go to wklap.com. It's an internet radio station every Friday at noon, every Saturday at 7 p.m. Radio Love, that's radioluv.com, every Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can find us on demand on Spotify, iTunes, iHeart, and phoenixbroadcasting.com as well. So a lot of places to find us and hear us. We encourage you to check it out. And again, we will be back again tomorrow with a couple more guests. You're not going to want to miss it. Great stories. We'll see you again tomorrow, everybody. Good night.
That's the end?
We're done. Calm down, people. Calm down. Okay? That's it.